Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, that is, people making a difference in the collective of our species at this time of the Great Shift. I have a wonderful, wonderful paradigm shifter with me tonight, Dr. Tim Bradbury, a chiropractor. But Tim is going to talk to us about chiropractic, cranial sacral, working with the brain, and also learning to unlimit yourself as a human being. And also, Tim's an actor, so we've got a real broad spectrum of talent here. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hello.
Hello. We're going to have some fun. You've been doing some studying with Dr. Mark Pick?
Yes.
Yeah. Why did you pick him?
Well, Mark Pick studied with Major Desjardins, who's a chiropractor and actually an osteopath years ago. And he's continued to develop, as well as the articulations of the skull and its relationship to the reflex of our body and health. And
he's a cranial sacral kind of guy?
Cranial sacral is a broad term, but it's actually sacral occipital technique, but it incorporates cranial sacral.
Hmm. Well, how long have you been a chiropractor?
1995.
Okay. Yeah. Do you like it?
I do.
And you worked with animals before that, right?
Yes, I was a farrier before that. I shoed horses. And
really? So yeah. Why did you go into the chiropractic biz?
I think my body was breaking down, actually. And I was getting rather, well, I just wanted to move on to something a little more exciting.
A little more exciting, huh?
Yeah.
So your body was breaking down, so you're a really good example of how chiropractic can work. So what did you do for your body? Did you sort of put yourself through the studies and the talents of a lot of people you were studying with?
Well, basically, I went from this very physically active to just living in my head to go to school, and then some sort of a combination when I got out, yeah.
Oh, really? But did it turn, I mean, you were able to make yourself better, though? You said you were coming apart physically.
Well, I had premonitions that I was starting to have some moany groanies.
Oh, you did? Well, you were still pretty young, right?
Relatively, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what we're really interested in talking about is unlimiting ourselves. So, you know, why do people go to chiropractors? I know I go sometimes just to get my emotions balanced. Or it sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Well, it's a vast amount of experience with chiropractic. Some people are just pain-oriented. Mm-hmm. Other people, they notice their emotions better, or their sleep, or their overall health, their immune system. And it's an individual experience, really, an individual from different chiropractors, too, that what they put their attention on.
Do you think a lot of it's energetics? Like, how does it work, very simplistically? I know that's
simplicity.
Asking a lot.
Well, what makes the most sense is our joints and muscles are loaded with mechanoreceptors or proprioceptors. And when we move, they fire to the brain. And a joint and muscle needs to move in order to stimulate the brain. Without the brain's input, our muscles go into contraction. That's why we're stiff in the morning and less stable walking. We don't have the feedback until that wakes up, until we move those joints and muscles. That's why when a joint gets locked and fixated, then we get tight muscles and also inflammation in that joint, and then we get almost disassociation from our body to our mind, and then we're predisposed to injury and certainly pain because we get local inflammation.
And we lose balance and so on?
We lose balance on the proprioceptor, but also structurally, neurologically, we lose balance because we don't have that sensory feedback. But mechanically or structurally, we also lose balance because we have compensations. If one area isn't moving, it affects another in the body.
Is it a little bit like when little ones start crawling, that etches into the brain capacities for doing things? Is that right?
Well, that's developmental, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we're not moving at all, are we deactivating movement in the brain?
Absolutely.
Huh. Mm-hmm. And what exactly is proprioception?
Proprioception is a term for the Ruffini corpuscles, Meissner's corpuscles. These are neurological receptors that go to the brain upon movement. We have them in the skin, we have them in the joints, and that's why when babies are developing, it's important to stimulate these because it actually shores
up
the brain.
Them, hold them and all of that kind of stuff.
But even as an adult, we lose them and we become what we call disassociated when they're not stimulated. And and that they actually get wiped out, those areas in our brain
that get
input, lose their ability to actually perceive after a while.
Huh.
And we call that the aging process. But we can't really stop that from happening in the big picture, but we can slow it down by staying active and balanced.
Can we regenerate to a degree? Like if we're not being active and things start to, you know, people aren't being active and they get more limited in their brain's capacities, can they start being active?
Absolutely.
And get regenerated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at 90,
huh,
you can actually have an objective change.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not too late.
So what you're saying is we kind of have to age, but we can elongate the process, or
yes,
we can re-stimulate our regrowing. Okay, so let's talk about, I know you were studying with Dr. Pick, and there's a lot about the brain that's really complicated, like the way the skull moves. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how it, what difference it makes?
Well, Dr. Pick put in detail every suture where, as an infant, the sutures of the skull is quite open. In fact, that soft spot is called the anterior fontanelle. It's very soft. The brain certainly is developing, but the skull is still enlarging to encompass the brain.
To fit the brain, yeah.
And it isn't fully, the sutures are not fully developed. And as an adult, they come together, and there's actually a little movement in some of these sutures. In the past, the textbook said absolutely, it's like a bowling ball, they're all fused.
Mm.
And that was in classic textbooks. So if you learned that 50 years ago, you still hold that today, if that's what you learned early. But we actually find there is micro movement within many of these sutures. Certainly facial is very mobile.
Really?
The facial bones.
So we could do facelifts by getting you to work on our bones?
Well, that's on a functional neurological level, it stimulates those nerves and blood vessels that come through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, there is micro-movement, and yes, that does have a feedback to our nervous system, and it can affect our emotions because of the inherent nature of our skull. We tend to... and that's where you kind of get woo-woo, because we can't have double-blind studies on that, but it's like it does have a feedback mechanism. We tend to store memories.
Is it woo-woo because there's just such an infinite possibility in it?
Because we don't, in a double-blind study, we can't reproduce.
Okay.
And as long as we can't reproduce, then it's not science, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we kind of fundamentally are flawed, because we kind of stop there often.
So let's go back. That's interesting, actually. So let's go back to the brain or the sutures.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use that? How are you taught to use the fact that the skull can move, can be moved, or the face can be moved? What do you do with that as a chiropractor?
We don't just isolate the skull. It's the whole system: the sacrum, the spine, the cranial sutures that make up the skull. All interrelate to each other in kind of a flow or rhythm.
Okay.
And that's where that cranial sacral or sacro-occipital words come in. There's a rhythm. And dis-ease within our system happens when we get out of order, out of rhythm.
Hmm.
And every one of us are unique and to have different rhythms or torpors, we call it. And hummingbirds have a very high state of torpor where a sloth is very low. That's an example. So... it's these cycles of the cerebral spinal fluid
like spinal fluid. That's what it is, eh? Like,
yeah, that's
like lymphatic fluid.
Well, it's still different. Okay. The spinal fluid is housed within the central nervous system.
Okay.
And the lymphatic is outside of that.
It's okay.
To the lymphatic, that's more of a immune function. But this is there's a pulse that each of us have. It's like 9 to 14 cycles a minute.
Okay.
And some are on the low end, some are on the high, but that's kind of the average. And someone who's on a real high state of being is on a higher end, and someone on a less excited state.
Excited state. That's
just how their makeup. You've seen people that are a little bit
hyper.
Yeah, it's just like that's the way they are.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Some of us are like that, I think. And so it's not, I mean, it's, it doesn't matter which kind you're at, but you use the cranial sacral, you use it to get the pulse evening. Is that what you do?
Well, ideally, it's just like a dance. Our body's in a dance. There's a balance to it.
Okay.
And when something's moving beyond what something else is, then it becomes dysfunctional or disease and becomes stressful for the system.
Mm.
And so...
And if it's blocked or something by
fixation of the joint, well, then some other part of the body has to compensate for that fixation.
Okay. So somebody comes into you and you move around the fixation so that they're released and the fluids move more easily, the balance is recreated, is that it?
Well, as a mechanical aspect and as a functional, neurological, and they all interrelate with each other.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes to see you, how do you enter? So do you choose what they want, or do you pick it intuitively, or do you feel the pulses? Or
I really listen to what the patient is there for, what they're really wanting addressed.
Okay.
So, first.
All right. And then what do you do?
Oh, you get into technique.
Well, I just know that there's a real subtleness with chiropractors about how you address what you're going to do next. It seems like it's partially a specialty, partially a style of your own, and partially a rapport with somebody else's, either their fluids or their... I mean, how do you see it? Do you see it in people or do you feel it?
Yes.
And so about the sutures, let's go back to Dr. Pick and the sutures. The sutures are those parts of the skull that move together and connect the skull so it holds in one piece after the fun.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, the little sutures there. Some are serrated, some are angulated. They all have very different looks to them throughout the skull.
And you said earlier that Dr. Pick said each one has a different effect. Is that
well? Right? He talked about the mechanistics of how the skull works, how potentially you could get intracranial movement, and then Donald's the actor, William Sutherland, who was an osteopath chiropractor in the 1920s, developed that craniopathy, the cranial movement, and then it was John Upledger, who was an osteopath as well, worked with more on the cranial sacral, and that's the meningeal system that we know.
Okay.
And then SOT is Dr. Major Dejonet, and of course further developed Dr. Mark Pick. He's a teacher and lecturer and original thinker himself of the reflex mechanism of all three of those.
What's SOT?
That stands for sacral occipital technique.
Okay. And that's the more advanced cranial sacral, or what?
Well, it's a different approach. I wouldn't say advanced. I feel that it's a specific way of looking at the body and addressing it on a active form of therapy.
So let's play with the whole thing about being unlimited or unlimiting people. It's when I think of being unlimited, I think of human potential as being so... we don't discover great levels of human potential a lot of times until we go hunting for it, right? And that might be, well, I don't know, living longer, healing sicknesses, whatever, right? So you were talking earlier about something, which was how our central nervous system is aligned to respond, not aligned, our central nervous system responds to fear issues. So let's talk a bit about thinking, thoughts, and...
Yeah, a lot of this actually, Rick Hansen, who's a neurophysiologist, PhD, and Richard Medius, who's an MD, and it was Danny Siegel and Jack Kornfield kind of wrote in this book, too. It's called The Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom, or Buddha's Brain. And it actually came out in 2009. And I really recommend this book because it really kind of puts it all together.
Called Buddha's Brain?
Buddha's Brain will do it, yeah.
By Rick Hansen.
How we are, our nervous system as human beings tend to be really hyper-vigilant and sensitive to to threatening situations, and we have a memory pattern that we tend to ingrain in ourselves at a real more lasting level, or as opposed to a
lasting, like it's a recording in our beingness. Or
right,
something?
We don't dissipate it okay. So easily; it gets ingrained within our system. Where happiness and happy experiences and really positive experiences tend to be more dissipated and then swallowed up by the heavier, more fear-based experiences that we had.
So, does it have to be that way?
Well, that's where we have to, as individuals, they talked about it in here, pulling weeds and planting flowers. But it has to be a cognitive thing, because if you look at the nature of how our system is, it tends to really grapple on to so-called darker experiences, and we seem to be attracted to that too in our in our entertainment world and our newspapers. It's all kind of a
Kind of gets the juices flowing, doesn't it?
Right, because that's where we are. We sit and watch a beautiful flower and sunset, and it does not enough stimulus. Mm-hmm. Our system really rocks on something.
Isn't that funny, hey?
So we have to kind of go against that a bit. Cognitively, to make a shift to say what I want in life, how do I really want to be? Why don't I be happy? And when you see a lot of people that aren't necessarily happy, and when you see people that just are absolutely in joy and happy, we think they're either on drugs or something wrong, or mentally ill.
Yeah.
It's like it's just not within our context, really, human experience.
That's right.
So we have to. That's an individual choice on that, and really, it's. Working with our brain and our system is like riding a horse. You don't be too hard on it, but not too light on it either. So you can understress it, or you can overstress it.
So what do we do? Okay, so if somebody comes to you who happens to be in a lot of pain and stuff, mm-hmm. do you take that information into consideration, the fact that they might have been built up to have a lot of reaction, they might be huddling against? I would think that a lot of people are huddled against life in a lot of ways because they're so recorded with fear and mm-hmm. reaction. Is that right?
Mm, certainly.
Yeah.
So, that's where we find often these what we call subluxations of the spine, and the sutures of the skull is as well participates in that. Definitely on an emotional level, the skull.
So the sutures will contract over emotional difficulty.
No, there becomes an asymmetry of movement, and when something's not flowing. It becomes diseased. So that's what that term is. Subluxation. We're not getting afferent or efferent pathways. That means sensory or motor response. So when that is not taking place, then disease takes place.
So what you're saying is our emotions can block those.
Our emotions are number one.
Yeah.
Okay. People, when they say, I didn't do anything, how come this is so far out in my neck or my skull? And it's really our thoughts. Our thoughts are actually have a more profound effect on our physiology than even the physical or the chemical. I mean, they all do, but they really are profound. And then we have the physical. Hmm. We're on a planet with 1G force. We're accelerating to the center of this planet. I think it's 32 feet per second or 30 point something. So we're actually going, we're having to deal with that. Then chemically we're bombarded with all this, our own endocrine system and toxins and hydration and diet and
expectations.
Radicals. So that's the chemical in it. All three are working together, and that's the state of our organism.
Hmm.
And if any one of these are out of balance, it pulls the other two down. If either one of them are exceedingly stronger, it helps support the others. So it's a continuum of all three.
It's really interesting. We think about little babies being born.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, as a chiropractor, like to work with them right at the beginning?
Well, you're going.
Interesting to me, because can we stop kids from growing up in a state of reaction?
Certainly, and it takes very little. It takes very little input, and you have to be really careful with that input. I generally, they're very sensitive. Their system's not developed. It's just supporting them, but you don't put in a huge shift on a child's skull because it's not developed yet.
Right.
Yeah, really.
And it's already moving anyway,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem logical to me that we would be able to help them grow with less fear patterning. Is that right?
Yeah, but we're dealing with an undeveloped nervous system at that point, so you don't have the feedback to work with. So you have to be really judicious with anything that you intervene with an infant, yes.
With an undeveloped mm-hmm. person.
They don't have that protective, the feedback, which we, as developed adults, have.
But you have a big impact on young kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've noticed that that makes a huge difference.
Well, they're fast responders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter was given antibiotics for her ears when she was about two, over and over again, and I finally just started taking her to the chiropractor, and she never had to have them again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's recommendable. So let's say if we're talking about this, the propensity of adults to have a lot of fears running or to be more responsive to fear material,
mm-hmm.
do you think, do you work with people on that basis? Do they come to you for that reason?
Well, I think it's kind of the unsaid. It kind of goes along with it. There are individuals who are aware of that change for
can
themselves.
Can you tell by looking at people when you're out in the street? Can you see who's fear-based and who's holding attention and who's because of their structure?
Well, yeah, I guess it's, again, I might not articulate that normally, but I'm fairly cognizant of that. Yeah, I could see the predispositions.
So can you tell people at home right now how they can look at themselves and maybe reduce some of that pile up of fear that's going on in there?
Oh, the body.
By looking at your structure?
Certainly. Well, unfortunately, the way we sit, where we hunch and we're forward, actually puts a neurovascular stress on our system from the spinal, from our neck to our skull.
Mm.
And we are actually, it shunts or shuts down some of our reflexes. Mm. And what are we doing? We're sitting on a computer monitor with our head forward and as opposed to upright. We're also sitting, we're not stimulating those mechanoreceptors. So we don't have that feedback from our bodies. We actually lose connections of our physiology, and over time, we start to lose those pathways, and that speeds up the disease process or aging.
Mm-hmm. Which none of us is excited about getting to.
So we also need to stay active.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find a balance. We can sit at our desk, but we need to get up. We need to move. We need to do antagonistic groups of muscles, opposite muscle groups than what we're using.
So it's like rolling your neck around and holding your head back.
Or standing up and breathing, that's a big thing, because our diaphragm gets very locked up when we sit,
mm-hmm.
and our head is forward. So if we can just get our ears over our spine and take good deep breaths. When we're in stress, that's the sympathetic, generally, fight or flight, and that's generally what we're predisposed to as human beings.
Hmm.
And chronic stress leads to breakdown of the system. Parasympathetic is the sleeping, reproduction, digestion, and that's the one that we, part of the system, the nervous system, that balances the sympathetic. It's not an either-or. They're not fighting each other. They work together to keep us in a homeostasis. When we get too much sympathetic, or fight or flight, then we get the so-called autoimmune type problems and chemical breakdown and structural and some emotional or brain function. So being active is vital.
So that can age us a whole lot faster if we're not active, right?
It predisposes to aging faster, yeah.
Well, here's something you need to tell people at home about, too, is tell them what happens with a kiss.
Oh, yeah, I mentioned a kiss that our lips are loaded with parasympathetic sensors. And it's like the eating process is parasympathetic. Peristalsis, the movement of food through our gastrointestinal system, needs parasympathetic to move.
Hmm.
And that's why they say not to eat when you're upset, because that's sympathetic. That kind of shuts that down.
Mm-hmm.
So food just rather sits on the top side.
Mm-hmm.
So the lips themselves, maybe that's part of this whole kissing thing. It's a relaxation It's it fires off, stimulates the parasympathetic, which is a sense of well-being or relaxation.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And it must be neurotransmissional then.
Yeah, it's absolutely. So it's just touching your lips when you're upset, for some, can make a profound effect of
relaxation.
People
do that a lot. They chew their lips. That's sort of interesting.
And certainly breathing. Expiration, deep expiration. A lot of us hold our breath, and that's another part of that sympathetic or fight or flight. But deep exhalation is when the parasympathetic comes in. So it's a balance. We don't want to be locked in one or the other. It's a dance.
So as far as the brain, I want to go back to the... Oh, I want to say this, that I learned from a woman that I had interviewed that the neurotransmissions are created first in the intestinal tract. Have you ever heard that?
Neurotransmitted.
Like serotonin and all of that.
Well, the neuromodulators, the neurotransmitters are GABA and dopamine. GABA. Dopamine's a neuromodulator. It's a GABA, which is inhibitory, and then glutamate, which is excitatory.
Hmm.
Those are the neurotransmitters. And they fire our nerve cells, whether inhibit or excite, throughout our brain.
Hmm.
And they're firing on each other very complexly, where they finally facilitate a reaction.
Hmm.
That's where glutamate can be rather toxic. You see, monosodium glutamate.
Right, okay.
And actually it's actually toxic to the cells in higher doses. You have to be really careful with taking that.
Oh, wow.
Glutamate.
What about GABA? Can it be... I guess what I learned about GABA is that it... Not that I wanted to go off into amino acids, but...
Well, it's a neurotransmitter. Well, I don't think we should be messing with that too much.
Okay.
Because you're dealing with... You're breaking the natural balance when you take a substance that could throw the other one off.
Oh, okay.
There are times... people take that with results, but I'd be real cautious of long term, because you're playing with a physiological substance that is a fine mechanism of balance.
Hmm. Well, back to my comments about hearing about, I thought it was neurotransmissions being created first in the intestinal tract. I think
you're talking about maybe the so-called second brain, the gut feeling,
possibly,
celiac plexus, which is made up of the mid-thoracic, or where our ribs, mid-back area is.
Okay.
Form this massive network of nerves, which is like flattened out size of your fist.
Hmm.
And that's our whole gastrointestinal, where we assimilate food and large blood supply and a large immune system in that area. And remember, we used to think that the world was flat.
Mm-hmm.
We're absolutely right, righteous about that. We really had it. I was.
Do you remember that?
Well, I was pretty young, but yeah. But this is where we get in at. Perhaps there's some indicators that maybe there is some origination synapses from that so-called gut feeling. There's a lot we don't know about the central nervous system.
Hmm.
We're learning more and more that so-called gut feeling might have something to it.
Well, I know a lot of people who make decisions according to that, and they're fairly good decisions. It's like an intuitive thing.
I'm sure it's modulated from the brain, but there's definitely, and there's a vagus nerve which goes from that area to the brain. So they work together. It's not an either or.
That's what interests me, too, is they do all work together.
Yeah,
nothing's
isolated in our system. And that's why you adjust one area of the body, or let's just say you have a subluxation, an area that's fixated where the muscles are not moving, and they're hypersensitive, they're more oriented towards pain. And that's why we're more stiff in the morning, like I said, because we haven't been stimulating those. But if we're injured, a joint could be taken farther out of its normal range of motion. It's actually hypermobilized, but it doesn't stay there. It goes into a locked, fixated, guarded, and then that becomes a response somewhere, another part of the body.
Mm.
And these areas as well, there's nerves that flow through these areas that go to different parts of the body. And we're more in tune to the muscular system and pain, but these nerves also go to our neuroimmune system, our viscera, our organs.
And so you could ostensibly go back into the brain in order to deal with that.
Well, everything goes back to the brain. The proprioceptors fire to the brain.
Okay.
And then the brain...
It's your big computer, huh?
It has the whole body, actually, is a computer, so to be. On a cellular level, it all is important, not just the brain.
I'm thinking about being unlimited and consciousness in the book that you're talking about,
the book.
Buddha's brain.
You know,
how would you work with that if I came in and said, you know what, Tim, I'd like to become more conscious?
Well, it takes responsibility with that. It's not easy. It's not for the squeamish, because you've got to go beyond what our normal physiological response often is, and that is delving into reactive or fear-based ways of being, which is generally by nature what we do, what stimulates us. It's our entertainment industry.
Yeah, really.
But where do we go? It's when we make a profound choice that I'm going to just be happy. And none of us get totally happy or sad, but I'm going to be predisposed to happiness by putting those memory patterns forward first in my system.
Hmm.
We can't ignore or totally avoid so-called the stressful, uncomfortable feelings that we have as a human being, but we can also. But we also have a choice in what we do with it. We don't have to have it playing over and over in our brain. But we tend to. We tend to think of that. And it affects our makeup. It affects our very vitality, our cranial sacral rhythms, our ability to adapt.
So if somebody is really depressed or in grief and so mm-hmm. on. Would you work on them for that, with that kind of approach?
If you work on the top side, you're working directly on the mind, and that's more of you're dealing with the psychiatry or counseling. And the way I work is on the physical and then the chemical as a result of the physical. And they all flow together back to the mental. So
well, the chemical also comes from the emotional and stuff mm-hmm. too, doesn't it?
They're all together.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? So do you ever work with mental health? Do you ever work with ADD or autism or any of those things?
Don't specify a particular disease or symptom. If we can get the body in firing together, mm-hmm. then whatever it is, whatever disease or symptom, from headache to cognitive dysfunction, improvement is bound to happen if that is, in fact, a cause. And often it is reflective. It's a part of it. None of it's an absolute whole. It's all a continuum relationship. So you have to address everything.
But it's almost like a flow or a flexibility that keeps people's body-mind creating mm-hmm. and unlimiting itself. Mm-hmm. So we're saying here that the limitations come from a holding pattern in response to what repeated fear or repeated frustration or unwillingness to...
Absolutely. And we live with it, and it's so-called normal. People can go absolute blind, so-called ocular migraine, from just stress, from emotional.
Yeah.
Or they can have actually migraines or have other absolutely...
What are migraines?
Well, migraines... Migraines are complex, and again, they're usually always a combination of all three of those, emotional, physical, and chemical. And there's a predispositions that some of us have more than others, and and there's different types of migraines. And there's
the predisposition comes from our physiology?
Mm-hmm, our makeup. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And if it's any due respect, people who suffer from migraines tend to be pretty highly developed, sensitive, high IQ people, but they deal with this. They deal with this predisposition to imbalance of those three.
Why? Why would highly sensitive people do that? You'd think that if you were a lute,
well, it's
and
similar,
you'd want to be tuned very gently.
Well, how about an Italian sports car then?
Yeah.
Right, great when
yeah.
it's running.
Yeah,
highly functional, but you do one little thing that throws something off. It's just that's the unique individual, and I kind of associate individuals who have migraines with Italian sports cars because they can run very well when they do,
and they can even exceed
beyond a normal car. But when they're running poorly, they do very poorly.
It's really interesting. Let's talk about energy and empathy and all of those. What makes up the body? You've been talking about all these three parts and the chemistry and the physical.
Mm.
What about energy? What about empathy? What about those kinds of things that we experience?
Compassion. Well, then you look into the parasympathetic or the sense of well-being, the emotional body that produces those so-called reactions in the body. Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm thinking a lot about empathy these days, and we had a bit of a talk on the phone mm-hmm. about that. It is hard for us all when we all share energy with everyone mm-hmm. else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Avatar, right?
Yeah.
And does that sharing of energy create those stimuli? Does that stimulate the biochemistry in the body?
For the ones who are cognizant of it, who allow it in? Mm-hmm.
Do you think we allow it in, or do you think it just hits us without our aware? I think a lot of people have it without knowing,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Whether they articulate it consciously or not.
Yeah.
Certainly, we're all affected by each other.
So what do we do about that, Tim?
Well, I think it's an individual choice, isn't it? You take in what you want and leave the rest, you know, behind the best you can.
So if we wanted to stay balanced, mm-hmm. we would learn how to shift our emotional state or clear things that are depressing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also to push out empathetic feelings that you don't need and want?
Well, you're dealing in the realm of psychology. But on the physical...
Is that psychology?
Well,
energy?
You're dealing... Yeah, okay. On the energy level is this. We cannot push away the negative. It's a cumulative of all of it.
Right.
But we put attention on what we really want to be.
Okay.
If we want to be happy,
mm-hmm.
it really is a choice. We can take pills or substances
choice.
Or we can do exciting events and momentarily might shift it, but it's not going to be sustainable. It's something that within ourselves we have to make a shift of active choice of how we want to be, and you can catch yourself on it.
And the brain itself, or the central nervous system, actually shifts as well, doesn't it, physiologically?
Absolutely.
When you make that choice.
The more you are putting in the well-being thoughts, the more you activate those neural impulses and synapses within the brain, and they actually get more profound and more efficient.
Hmm. And you can count on them more instead of all this backlog of reactive fear-based stuff.
Right. You can't eliminate the fear-based stuff, but it becomes less on the surface.
So you look it right in the eye and
mm-hmm.
choose a different
mm-hmm.
response.
Mm-hmm. And that's the art of being human, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And talking about art, let's talk about acting. Because I'm thinking, you know, I often say to people that performance can heal more people at a time than anything else.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Because you can lift a million people at once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
Yeah, well, it's mm-hmm, very much so.
So tell us about your acting. What is it you're going to be in?
Oh. Well,
or do you want to? You don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I have a great honor, actually. Glenn Apollo Hergenhan, who's from Bellingham originally, mm-hmm. is now in New York. He's a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the honor of performing one of his plays called The King of Sparta.
Oh,
and,
goody.
It's a one-person play, and it takes place in a jail cell in South America, the first half, and it's full of Greek mythology and literature, and it's a very unique, profound script that I'm quite looking forward to.
Well, if he starts off in a jail cell, at least for the first half, I should think it's a trail toward unlimiting oneself, is it?
Absolutely. It's a voyeurism into this person's beingness, which is wonderful for a one-person play. It's not just a talking head.
Ah. Well, I told everybody that we might have you in your powdered wig, which we don't have today, but I've seen Tim, and he's a delightful performer in a... What was that play you were in? It was really
fun. The Misanthrope. That was a Molière, yeah.
Oh, that's right. So what I was thinking is, why I asked you that, is that there are people in the audience when you're doing a performance or when they're at a performance that can actually be shifted physiologically.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's, for me, like any art, whether it's painting or performing arts, is when we get in the absolute moment, in the presentness, and see something, then there's a shift that takes place. There's a beauty.
And your whole body, mind participates in it. Eh? Mm-hmm. It's a different form of empathy, really. It's vicarious living in a way, is it? Or is it interaction, maybe? It doesn't matter, really.
Yeah, it has to be interaction to be art, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, in my opinion.
You have to be participating in it, in your choice or in your personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Where do you see all this going with the study of the brain?
Really? Well, we're just starting. I remember my physiology book in chiropractic college in the early 90s. Many of those chapters, this is what we know so far, and what we actually have stated might not be absolutely true.
Hmm.
We're still in the process.
They say that right in the book?
Right in the book of physiology, medical manual.
Hmm.
Because there's so many avenues we've not yet totally wrapped up, and it keeps changing.
And they really awaken an awareness of, for example, the cranium and the movement of the platelets and the...
Well, we talk about the mind, our brain, is the most profound effect on our health and well-being. Then there's the physical, and then there's the chemical, emotional, or toxic thoughts, traumas, or toxins.
And the mind is where you can choose your thoughts and intentions.
Well, or we're a product of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can choose or be a product of them. That's the art of being human, is it the great balance of all three. And so the cranial sutures often have an emotional overlay.
Hmm.
And some say, and this is where you get the woo-woo, even in utero, you know, we hold these energetic components, and there can be a great release or trauma from binding balancing the little cranial sutures in relationship to our body and reflex.
In utero?
I'm going out there, but yeah. So I mean, it's just speculating of, you know, where it's all it's a continuum. How do we say, you know, when do we start experience as a developing?
Well, I think our lineage must have a lot to do with it. In utero, you're already kind of activating a whole bunch of programs, aren't you?
Yeah, sure.
And they could be fear-based programs, couldn't they?
Sure, absolutely. It seems
and the style of the sutures of the parents, could it be?
Sure, predisposition, genetic influence, so-called predispositions. So that means that our system can change. We can adapt to a different way.
But also, when you think of, I'm going back to in utero because I'm thinking about beginnings, and that, you know, our personalities also have something to do with it, and we have that by the time.
We have individual choice to an extent.
But, I mean, we also have individual personalities even before we're making choices, do you think? Like who's fast-moving, who's slow-moving, who's
just a
funny,
makeup.
And that must make a huge difference as well, hey?
That's what makes us all unique, lovely, unique.
So what about, where's it all going? What do you see? Where do you see it all going? Chiropractic, cranial, C, whatever you call it, C.
Well, I think it'll continue. I think it's going to be exciting over time to see even more as we can, really isolate. Where is it going? I don't know.
We do is isolate the way we limit ourselves, right? And we can move through that.
Yeah, it's.
Maybe we can time travel, be transdimensional. Why not?
Well, then, you know, the so-called black hole is actually a white hole on the other side. That hole, it's a continuum, eternity. And how can we even conceive of something finite through infinite through a finite mind? We have to go into that infinite source, and that's where we get kind of in trouble to be able to do that sometimes.
But it's sort of interesting because I'm very interested in the whole art of healing, you know, and when you're talking about attitudes and emotions shifting the way our nervous system has been, you know, trained and where it's been compressed and where our limitations are. You sort of think, I think anyway, that if people really unlimited Who knows? Maybe we can defeat aging. Maybe we can defeat lifetime, you know, structured lifetime. Maybe we can live for 200 years. What do you think?
Well,
I'm not asking you to decide that. I'm just saying, play with me.
Yes. I would say this, that it's all of these toxic effects is what brings us down the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can minimize them on all three levels.
It's pretty hard to do, isn't it?
Well, it's impossible that we know so far to eliminate them, but we can certainly have higher expressions of each one. Less.
How do you teach people to detoxify? Emotionally, mentally, physically?
I think finding balance in life. Not being locked up into just one thing.
And as a performer, which you are sometimes, you think performance for some people is a healing?
Well, when I talk to people in their 90s, patients in their 90s, late 90s, functional, I often get, and I do, a pretty consistent answer. They're passionate about life. They have interest in something. So theater is one, or art, or painting, or
writing, yes.
Some sports, even. Second, they don't have a big calorie intake. What they eat is very healthy, so not heavy eaters. And third, they remain active. So they're firing those proprioceptors in the body. They're keeping their brain stimulated.
And they're at beginnings a lot, aren't they? My understanding is they're not afraid to begin things. And
right.
Learn
Lifelong
things
learners. And, yeah. They're keeping their brain stimulated. And as long as we keep our brain stimulated, we're going to decrease the rate of aging of the brain. That's well known.
And I like what you said, do many things. It's like being, because I'm thinking that the creative drive is really great for people, isn't it? It's really like writing, acting, sewing.
Our passions. Yeah. Absolutely. To be passionate in life. And that's an individual expression that each of us have to define for ourselves.
Have you always found yours?
Oh, no. No, I had to go off. I had to go off on my own for about 10 years to find out that I had it all the time. But, I looked for it outside of myself, sure.
Outside of yourself. How'd you find it?
I had to come back to myself, basically.
Meditation and all that?
I'll basically travel the world looking for something outside of myself and finding out that it was here all the time.
But isn't that kind of the crux of many, many stories that are written, epic poetry and so on?
Sure. It's here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Wizard of Oz, right?
What was it like being a farrier?
Oh, it was lovely. It was very physical. Mind-body. I'm working with my head as well as body to balance a horse in motion.
And you did, that's putting shoes on horses, isn't it? But you had that other sense that you were balancing the horse out.
In its gait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it had balance and movement and stability.
And so do you do chiropractic on horses now?
Not so much. Occasionally, but mostly human-oriented. No,
human-oriented. Do you miss the animals?
I do, yeah. That's why I have a border collie.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, she's beautiful. So I'm looking at how many people are working with animals these days. I'm really thinking that part of our unlimited selves are coming toward understanding that the animals are also extremely wise and can be emotional and can be transformed as well, right?
Mm. Oh, they have gifts that we can't even put our head around.
But did you know that already?
Oh, working with horses, sure. They have a sense about them if you really beyond our ability to comprehend.
Hmm.
They're definitely out there.
So, and let's see, I'm going back to toxicity. When we're in the toxic world that we're in right now, do you think that having chiropractic and so on is a good way to detox?
I think it's a wonderful way, being specific to the cause of of stimulatory to the balance of the brain, mm-hmm. to the body. Mm-hmm. When I separate brain from body, in that it's not separate, but there's a functional through chiropractic that we're stimulating that balance. Mm. That's really the vitalistic or functional approach to chiropractic. Mm-hmm.
I guess I often think about how if a person, because as you know, I'm a counselor, I'm an intuitive, but if a person has a lot of pent-up anger, for example, they get really dark circles under their eyes, and if they're really toxic.
Yeah, that's your it goes into your endocrine system now, your kidneys and your adrenals, and you know, you get deficiencies and excesses flowing.
But it can be from either emotion or pizza or whatever I'm saying.
Sure.
I find that fascinating.
An example of an objective finding on someone who hasn't done anything physically but just mentally thought is there's a couple muscles in the upper back that are fired from the 11th cranial nerve, which is stimulating just from thought. Hmm. The spinal accessory comes off the 11th cranial nerve, and the levator scapula and the upper trapezius is innervated by that. Hmm. So just solving math problems or thinking a lot will tighten the muscles of our upper back, of those specific muscles.
So when you're saying innervated, so this part becomes very weak. This
very tight, hypertonic.
Really?
Then hypersensitive. And then it creates congestion. It starts to impinge blood flow, and it affects other parts of our system. So that's where we've got to be physically and mentally and chemically in balance the best we can.
And I can remember having a really strange gut reaction to someone, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a doubt, and then my back would go out.
Sure.
It's the same thing, isn't
profound.
It?
Profound.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Very much
isn't
so.
Isn't that interesting? It doesn't mm-hmm. matter if your back goes out first or if your stomach goes out first, yeah?
Well, it's just like the mind-body connections. It's closer than that. It's like the elbow-wrist connection. I mean, it's all part of it, connected. It's interrelated.
Hmm.
We can't really separate the two.
Now, there's something else you told me, which was somebody had gotten deaf. A woman had been deaf for 5 years. I'm looking for some examples now of people.
Oh, that was the cranial.
Yeah.
That was actually my mentor there, Dr. Mark Pick. He observed an individual, a 75-year-old woman, who was 5 years deaf in one ear, and by just a gentle movement of the sutures of that area, her hearing was vastly restored.
The sutures up on the top of the head?
It was on the side, around the ear.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's an example. So we can't say absolutes, you know, everyone who's deaf, and that's what they need, but it's like you have to look at the flow.
But what's mostly intriguing about this discussion with you is that everything is about the flow mm-hmm. and the interaction mm-hmm. of it all. It's mm-hmm. not...
It's a balance. We don't want excesses or deficiencies. We want that middle road.
And you want
we're
things
healthiest
to be freed for the flow,
mm-hmm.
but there's no one way to deal with all people, is there?
No, that's what makes us unique, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the most exciting thing about being a person. So tell people how they can either get hold of you, or if you've got a website.
Well, I'm in Fairhaven in Bellingham,
mm-hmm.
and... my email address is bradburycairo@yahoo.com. So bradburycairo@yahoo.com.
Okay. And we're looking forward to seeing you perform. What is it called, the Spartan?
The King of Sparta.
The King of Sparta in May.
Yeah, that'll be at the Idiom Theater here in Bellingham.
Great. That's a great name, too, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm thinking I'll go there and I'll see how my body flows with the information of releasing from the trap of jail.
Yes. Well, that's where I think profoundly when you look at an individual who's entrapped, you can see that we entrap ourselves. And we can when you witness someone else who's entrapped and realize that they're not really trapped, but they've trapped themselves, the irony is that we do that to ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to change. And that's where the little aha brilliancy can come in to when we recognize that.
So we can untrap ourselves.
We have the ability to make a choice anyway. We do have a choice.
Yeah, we do. And it's learning to make that consciously. I like what you said earlier about how sometimes it's a lot of work to keep making the choice and impacting. But it's worth doing. It's the heavy lifting, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Bradbury. I've really enjoyed this time. You've made me think about a lot of things.
And you made me think as well.
It was fun.
Thank you.
This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to give me any feedback on this show with Dr. Timothy Bradbury and chiropractic and all kinds of things that relate to chiropractic and your body, email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle, or what's yours again, Tim?
It's bradburychiro@yahoo.com.
bradburychiro@yahoo.com. And any feedback about other guests or suggestions for guests gratefully received or even a session with me, that's Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for next week's guest, and I don't really know who it is yet. It'll be a surprise. Good night and many blessings.